listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Well, hello and welcome to the March episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina, or is it the IT crowd? We'd be rechristened. If listeners could see behind the scenes what's been going on tonight and setting up for this remote recording.
We're the opposite of the IT crowd. We don't know how to do anything.
The non-IT crowd.
Oh my word.
The still struggling to work iPhones crowd.
That's Orla Shinawi, and she is in one corner of my screen, and Rose Manley is in the other one. Hello, Rose and Orla.
Hello.
Hello, hello. I got the nicest corner, thank you.
I'm Richard Moore, and well, a strange episode, a strange time, isn't it, for cycling and everything else, but we've got quite a lot of racing in this month's episode, and we're going to make the most of it because we don't know when there will be more racing. I was at Het Nieuwsblad recently, and we'll get some interviews and action from there. And we will talk quite a lot, though, about the coronavirus and how it is affecting the cycling calendar and you know, forcing us all to put everything on hold for a bit, apart from the cycling podcast Femina, which will carry on as usual.
Hurrah!
Probably fighting off millions of other podcasts that start as a result of being isolated, everyone being stuck in their own homes for too long.
Remember the original and best, folks.
Do you think podcasting will be a boom industry in this period, Rose?
Oh, yeah. There'll be a podcast about everything.
All kinds of social media, I think. Yeah, you can see it already, all the content of people just being bored in their homes, which I have bravely contributed to. So I'll not criticise.
You're in Amsterdam, Orla. So I think you're on day two of lockdown. And Rose asked you earlier on when we were, before we started recording, how you were finding it. And you said, well, it was okay at first, but you are literally 48 hours in.
Not even.
Sorry,
it started
at
Monday morning and this is Tuesday night. So, yeah, not even two full days in yet. And I'm going slowly a little bit stir crazy right now. But anyway, this is your refuge, people. This is your safe corner of the world where all is as was and as will be.
Having said that, later in the episode, we will hear an interview with Martina Alzini, the Italian rider on Bigla Katana, Tusha, a member of the Italian Olympic track squad, who has been living in this lockdown situation in Italy. Life has been strange for her and her fellow Italians. And I mean, she spoke very movingly, I thought, about what that's been like, what it's been like to train and live in that situation. So we will hear from her later in the episode. But I mentioned there has been a lot of racing. Orla, have you got a news roundup for us?
Yeah, I do. You remember a quaint time when we had actual racing to enjoy? Well, you might think it's all gone, but no, the Cycling Podcast Femina is the last reserve of actual race results for now. We've had a lot since the last episode, actually, haven't we? So let me take you back in time. We had the inaugural Dubai Women's Tour won by Lucy van der Haar of High Tech Products, Burke Sport, formerly Lucy Garner, of course, the British rider. She also took a stage along the way. That was her first stage win since 2015 at a race. Anna van der Breggen won the Setmana Ciclista Valenciana. She also took a stage along the way to that. Annemiek van Vleuten took her first win of the season and her first in the rainbow bands at Omloop Het Nieuwsblad with a typical solo attack. She finished 42 seconds ahead of Marta Bastianelli and Floortje Mackay with Chantal Vandenbroek Black on the same time in fourth. I think you both watched that, didn't you? It was a brilliant battle for second to fourth after that unsuccessful chase for van Vleuten. Brilliant finish. Lorena Wiebes won Omloop Van Het Hageland, showing the recent fuss with her Park Hotel Valkenburg team hasn't distracted her from the task in hand. I don't know if you noticed, though, I spotted she inconveniently didn't have enough time to zip up her jersey and show off the team branding in all its glory as she crossed the line. That was a bit bit of a shame.
What are you trying to suggest, Orla?
Oh, no, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. I just think it's a wee shame, shall we say, when she doesn't have long left in the team. Marta Bastianelli was again beaten into second at Hacheland. Chantal Vandenbroek-Black then did an Annemieke and won Lusamine des Dames with a 50-kilometre solo attack to take her third win at that race in 6 years. And then Strada Bianca was...
Should we really say that is a Annemieke when Black has won it so many times? Really, Chantal Black was just doing a Chantal Black.
I meant more surely. In terms of the 50k long range attack.
Going yeah, solo, yeah. Yes.
But absolutely.
That's true, actually.
Vandenbroek Black was in Vandenbroek Black.
By the time I saw the live footage, Chantal Black was already way ahead and then that was it, wasn't it?
And doing what she often does.
Didn't get to see any of the fighting for position or anything.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Really remarkable attack. And then Strada Bianca was supposed to be the second women's world tier race of this season, but ended up being the first one to be cancelled. And of course, we've seen every race since follow suit, which takes us into this current period of limbo. The UCI have officially suspended racing until the 3rd of April, but of course racing at the end of that month has also been postponed, with both Flèche Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège, which were supposed to be in the 22nd and the 26th of April, also postponed, and men's racing postponed beyond that. In other news, the French rider Marion Sicot has admitted to using EPO after testing positive at the French Time Trial Championships in June of last year. She had initially claimed, if you remember, that women have exceptionally high levels of EPO when they're menstruating. But she's now admitted to Googling how to buy the drug, buying it from China and injecting it. But in an interview, which I'm sure many of you will have noticed with Stade 2, she claimed she only went down this route after months of psychological abuse from the Dolcini Van Eyck team director, Mark Brack. Stade 2 published messages allegedly between the two in which Brack is said to have asked Sicot to send him regular bikini pictures, apparently to keep a check on her weight, but to keep the practice a secret. The Belgian registered team is being investigated by the UCI after allegations from other riders, and have since released quite a startling press statement accusing Sicot specifically of trying to take advantage of the Me Too movement in relation to her confessed doping. And that's your news roundup for March.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker, flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Well, thanks very much to our new title sponsor, iWalker. And they've come in since the last cycling podcast, Femina, and we're very grateful to them for their support. They are fans of cycling and they do listen to the podcast. That's how this came about, because they got in touch after hearing we were looking out for a new title sponsor. And here we are. A little bit about iWalker. They lend money to small businesses to keep the wheels turning. And they were founded in 2012, and they've made finance available to more than 50,000 businesses across Europe. They can lend between £1,000 and £250,000 and make it quick and easy to get a decision. Among the businesses they've lent to are bike shops and cafes, spin studios, hair salons, building companies, and pretty much any other kind of business. Over the coming months on the Cycling Podcast Femina, we'll hear more about iWalker, and in particular their involvement in cycling, because it's not just a cycling podcast they're supporting. There are other initiatives too, races and a cycling club, the Kendall Cycle Club. We are certainly very grateful to them for their support over this coming year. And, well, normally I'd say it allows us to go and cover races, but it's going to allow us to certainly produce lots of podcasts, so don't worry about that. And we've got some plans that we're developing about how we cover the sport of cycling in this hiatus. But we, fortunately, this
might be worth letting us know about that, Richard. Actually.
Oh yeah, don't worry. Don't worry. They're being developed.
No, I'm glad you said that, Richard, because I've got some ideas as well. Maybe we could share them.
Oh yeah, no, don't worry. I was referring more to the plans that we have, i.e., the other cycling podcast to cover the Giro. That's the specific plan that we've been working on. But we will come up with plans for the Cycling Podcast Femina between us, won't we?
Yeah. Well, we've got some really interesting interviews lined up already for next month. There are plenty of stories still to be told.
We do, Orla. That's absolutely right. But there has been racing. So let's make the most of that, shall we? I thought we could each pick out a moment from the racing that we've had that, you know, has produced a talking point or got us excited or interested or intrigued. Orla, what's your moment?
Mine was Annemiek van Vleuten's win at Nieuwsblad, partly because we could watch it for the first time, and wasn't that wonderful? I was actually on a family day out at the time. We were at a science museum in Amsterdam, but I was able to have it on my phone watching as we went around until somebody said, "Do you realise your telephone's on?" I was like, "Well, yes, because I'm obviously watching the cycling." Anyway, it was just the way that she won it. She just makes it look so easy, but it was a real delivery and all of that hard work over the winter. And I loved seeing her doing it in fairly typical style with the rainbow bands for the first time. And it's made me think, the reason I'm picking her out in particular is that it's made me think that with everything that's happening at the moment, the riders and the teams who'll be best placed to come back from all of this and sort of hit the ground running will be the most disciplined, will be the ones who are still prioritising their racing fitness regardless of when the next race is going to be, and training as hard as if there was no uncertainty. And you've got to suspect that Annemiek van Vleuten will be that very rider. So at the moment, we are being told that the Olympics will still be going ahead. That will still be her focus. And I think it'll be really exciting to watch how she comes back after all of this, because adversity is a true test of a champion, isn't it? So yeah, Annemiek's win and the way she did it and having the rainbow bands, I've been able to watch it at the Science Museum. They were all my moments.
Great to see her. Great to see her win in the black gilet of world champion.
The
narrowing of the eyes there, Orla. Has Annemiek van Vleuten not gone off bikepacking, did I not read?
Anna van der Breggen has. Jip van Bos has.
Oh, Anna van der Breggen, sorry. I thought it was Annemiek van Vleuten.
Oh, Richard, come on.
Anna van der Breggen, Jip van Bos, and Chantal.
Amy Peters.
Was it Amy Peters?
Peters.
Well, the only one I know for sure is Yip, because I have been in touch with her and she's definitely been off bikepacking, and I'm hoping to chat to her for the next podcast. They're actually coming back today. I don't know how long they were planning to go for, but they have only been gone a couple of days, but I think they've been told to come back because of any threatened lockdown, which is a bit of a shame, but you know, at least they got out. It'd be interesting to hear what their plans had been and what they got up to. That's
whoever
another
they
chat.
Are. whatever they were doing,
whoever they are, wherever they are, whatever they've been doing.
Could you do some virtual bikepacking on Zwift or something?
I'm quite sure that's being developed as we speak. Kind of defeats the purpose of the adventure, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. My moment was probably Lorena Wiebes winning Om Luke Het Hageland, because I'd been watching her the day before at Het Nieuwsblad. We'll hear a little bit about that actually in the package from Het Nieuwsblad that we've got coming up, but you know, the body language and just observing her and her team after the wrangles over the winter about whether she would stay with that team, Park Hotel Valkenburg, or not. You know, you would have thought a rider so young, so talented, but still so young, might have been very distracted by that, and it might have really played havoc with her winter training. But clearly, no. I mean, she looked good in Het Nieuwsblad, actually. I thought she was a real danger in that race, and then obviously won the next day. And at the finish of Het Nieuwsblad, I spoke to her team manager, Park Hotel Valkenburg, Esme Tromp, just to find out about the state of relations between Lorena Wiebes and the team. How is she doing? Because this was her first race of the year, I think. Obviously, uncertainty over the winter about her future. I spoke to you about that. But has that affected her? She's obviously going quite well. Has she been able to be focused fully on being a rider?
We did a really good training camp 2 weeks ago in Altea in Spain, and that was really good also for the team to have her in the group again. And I think she had a good winter. She's in shape, but today was just... just a little bit too much.
Is she happy though? I mean, are things kind of resolved between you for her to focus on the races over the next few months?
Yeah, we have a good relationship and everything is okay now. And we can speak to each other and have a good day, so no problem.
So that was Esme Tromp from Park Hotel Valkenburg. And Rose, what about you? What was your moment of the early season, or what might actually turn out
the
to be
season.
The season? Yes, the whole season. Well, I have to say, I thought Lottie Capecchi's performance at La Samin was quite a revelation. I mean, as Orla said in the news roundup, Chantal Blaak went off with the win. Something like, I don't know how many kilometres it was from the end, but a long way from the end.
50.
But for 50, for Lottie Capecchi to come in on third, and that was about a day after she'd finished at the World Championships. She'd actually missed out by the tiniest of margins on getting Olympic qualification in the team pursuit for Belgium. And to come back almost immediately, be in the breakaway in La Samin and take third, I thought that was really impressive, because I think people have been expecting a lot from Lottie Capecchi for years as a Belgian rider, and obviously there's such a great tradition, especially in the men's side of the sport in Belgium, and people have always put a lot of pressure on Capecchi and Jolien Daw to kind of perform. So it was kind of great to see her get an extraordinary result, you know, amongst a packed field at La Samin. And I would have said, had there been other races, you know, that shows a lot of promise. But yeah, I can't say that. So, you know, it was a great result in of itself.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet reminding me to tell you that this month's episode of Cycling Podcast Femina is supported by Stitch Fix. Now, Stitch Fix is the online styling service. Really easy. Go to their website, fill out a style quiz about your clothing preferences, shape, sizes, and what you like to wear. And then it's over to your stylist, who'll hand select and send you 5 items of clothing and accessories, along with a lovely card, including outfit inspiration and style tips. You try everything on at home, keep and pay what you like, and send back the rest. The postage is free, and you can leave feedback on what your stylist sent you and request a different stylist the next time, or keep the same one. There are over 100 brands available, some well-known, some not so well-known. And the best bit is that you pay just £10 for your stylist time, which is redeemable against anything you keep. Delivery and returns always free, and you don't need to subscribe to anything. You can arrange regular deliveries if you like, or you can just order when you want to. And Rose, you have done it. You've done Stitch Fix. How did you find that experience?
I have. I have been Stitch Fixed. And I have to say, what a dream to, you know, if you're, well, not a dream to be stuck in your house all the time, but to have a personal stylist send you beautiful clothes from wonderful designers that you may know or you don't know, that's pretty good, isn't it? That is pretty amazing. But yeah, I got some great clothes last time.
And you kept a couple of items, I believe, Rose. Would you like to tell us what they are?
Yes, I did. As you said, you get sent 5, and I kept 2 of them. One of them is like a black mesh long sleeve top with like these furry balls, furry polka dots.
I've seen this, haven't I?
Absolutely.
It is not. This is the delivery you got when I was there. It was really nice. Yeah, really nice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. And also some black and white pleated 3/4 lengths, which I wore a lot in when I went to Colombia last month. Wore them an awful lot, which was, yeah, wonderful. So some great items and to get clothes that you wouldn't pick for yourself necessarily and look great and you love. That's, yeah, brilliant.
It is quite exciting when the box arrives, I must admit. I'm a regular customer. This is a Stitch Fix top that I'm wearing. You might not be able to see it properly, but, well, take it from me. Take my word. It's really good. Get started with Stitch Fix today and support Cycling Podcast Femina by going to stitchfix.co.uk/cycling right now. That's stitchfix.co.uk/cycling. Well, as I mentioned, I was at Het Nieuwsblad and I spent the day in the Drops team car, something that both of you have done before, Orla and Rose, for the Cycling Podcast Femina. I don't think I've been in a team car before with Bob Varney, who runs the team. Quite a lot of new riders on that team this year. They've picked up a few of the Virtue Cycling riders. That team folded, of course. And also in the car was Julian Wynn, who is he's got a very distinguished record as a rider, first of all, a former British champion. He rode the Giro d'Italia and has also worked with the women's team at British Cycling and with other women's teams as well. But he was very involved in the British women's team when Nicole Cook won the Olympic gold medal in Beijing in 2008. He really sort of managed that group and coached that group. And, he's been very involved in women's cycling at the highest level for quite a long time now. So he was in the back working sort of on a freelance basis for that team at the moment. Let's hear from my day with Bob Varney and Julian Wynn in the Drops team car at Het Nieuwsblad. Here we are. Well, the race is underway, Bob. What do you expect to happen today? Come on, prediction time.
I think the race will be won by a lone rider, alone on their own, in
Drops kit.
It would be nice, but I think one has to be realistic. If we can make the nearly group, I think that would be good. The group that's there or thereabouts.
Julian, who's going to win? What's your prediction?
I think it'll be 15-20 coming into the finish. Who will win? I think it'll be a sprinter.
Marta Bastianelli?
Yeah, I'll go for Marta Bastianelli, yeah. Or Van Dijk on a long one in the last 5K.
He's hedging his bets now. He's giving you two.
Well, I'm a bit more definitive than you, though, Bob.
I said it would be won by a lone rider.
I didn't hear any names.
Okay, I think Ellen Van Dijk. I think someone will get away on their own, and it won't be Marta Bastianelli or any of the sprinters. But it's quite a difficult race to predict. If you look back 2 years ago, Christina Siggard won. You know, lovely, lovely person, nice, solid rider, but not one of the top riders in the sport. She got popped and she came back and she won. So that gives everybody hope, you know. But I think it's quite a difficult race to predict. Who do you think Richard's going to win?
I mean, I think Bastianelli is a good shout. I'm intrigued by Lorena Vibus to see, because again, if it's a group that size, she could be there. I was studying her body language on the podium presentation, and you know, she wears the Dutch champions jersey, so she already looks different to the rest of her team. And she had a hat on, and she was sort of standing slightly apart from them, so. Yeah. You know, she doesn't want to be on that team.
No.
It's her first race of the season. And I'm really curious to see, because she's certainly got the ability to win today, hasn't she?
She's probably the fastest.
But the winter,
based on last year.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and the stress the winter must have taken a toll on her.
Yeah.
If it's a group, Con Rivera, of course, maybe. Could be there. Sarah Roy.
Can you help me, though? Your auto request is in the bench.
Shortlist is getting longer.
I need to get some
clothes. Okay, no worries. On my way. Still in front, 102, and the gap is 13 seconds.
30 seconds to the lone leader, 30 seconds.
Hanselman, who did it last year. Looking through the start, there's quite a few of your ex-riders. Do you like seeing them? You know, Alice Barnes, Abby May, Parkinson, obviously, Eva Berman as well at Bulls Domes. Do you enjoy seeing how they're getting on?
Yeah,
your
very much
alumni?
So, yeah. Yeah, Eva's in our hotel. She always comes over, gives me a big hug and has a chat, so it's good. Alice always keeps in touch. Abby May Parkinson down in our hotel. Yeah, very proud of all of them. Abby Van Twisk at Trek Segafredo, not racing today, but so we developed some good riders, but also staff. You know, a lot of our staff have gone on to bigger and better, more well-paid things.
Nicole Hasselman, Dolcinivan Export, and the gap is 16 seconds.
I guess that's a measure, though, of development team, which is kind of what you are in a way. you know, to provide a stepping stone. I know you want to win races as well, but yeah. Part of your remit is you've got a lot of young riders. You always had a lot of young riders on the team, so part of the remit, I guess, is to develop them, and the sign of success is to see them sprinkled around the field in a race like this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, kind of. We are. We're a development team, and we're proud of it. You know, and until we get a more substantial budget where we can then, you know, reward our riders better, then that's the way it's going to be. So it's no good kind of being anything other than proud of that. That's what we do. You know, we like to think we do it quite well. So, as you say, that's proof of the pudding is, you know, how far your riders go on. Alice Barnes, world champion. Eva Berman, you know, Bols Dolmans, Abby Van Twist, Trek Segafredo. Yeah.
You're a rider down, actually, in this race, aren't you? But so you've got a spare place. If you could have one rider, if you could sign one rider from another team, who would it be? Money was no object.
Okay, so let me tell you a secret, shall I? Like a secret?
Yeah.
So end of 2018, we had four riders signed before our co-title sponsor pulled out at the very death, and we released them all. One of those was Demi Vollering, who then subsequently left and signed for Park Hotels, went on to great things. So that would have been a nice one to have kept. But would she have developed, you know, in the same way? I don't know. But she's always friendly, always chats. I think if I could sign any rider back, I would probably take Eva Berman back as a leader. Because I think she's massively talented. I think she works for others pretty much all the time at Bols. She's a great influence on the group. She was really good with Abby May in the Flanders 2 years ago. So she lifts the level of the group around her. She's a real team player, and I think she'd be an excellent leader. We had her, obviously, she was leader for the women's tour. Had a couple of, I don't think he was ever outside the top 10, and, you know, seventh on GC. So, yeah, I think you're putting me on the spot a bit, but I think I would probably take Eva Berman. Come on, Finya, come on. Go on, go. Go on, Finya, come on, that's your ticket to the finish. Come on, in that group. Well done, Finya.
Well, we're what? 80 kilometres into the race. Watch that car in front, Bob.
What car is that?
It's absolute carnage. Two Trek Segafredo riders down. Two Bols Dolmans riders went down earlier on.
That's
Audrey Cordon-Rigaud has crashed again. And we saw Annemiek van Vleuten on the deck as well, but she got back up and back in to the front of the race very quickly indeed. But little groups split all over the place. We think there's a front group of about 17. You were saying, Bob, it's how it should be. I mean, the weather's wild. It's been raining. It's strong wind. Conditions are pretty horrible, and the race has split as we kind of expect. How are your riders getting on?
We still have Chewy in front of us, so we're quite cool with that. So that's Sarah Penton and Marilyn Van Gielhoff, who are our kind of big hopes for today. So, but yes, it's tough. It's Belgium. It's February. You know, it's a proper bike race, isn't it?
Few surprises. Leah Thomas was out the back. A big La Katusha rider who had been going very well in the south of Spain. Do riders sometimes get caught out, you know, coming from warm training camps into this?
Well, they'd been at training camp down near Denia, and she won stage four of Valencia last week, looked really strong. So that was a big surprise. You'd think that she's probably not 100%, perhaps a bit sick. But yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Good to see Lizzie Banks of the Cycling Podcast up in that front group. Yeah,
yeah, well, she's strong. She likes bad weather and she likes tough races, attritional races. So no surprise there. Are.
So approaching the moor, we've got that 21 rider group ahead. 30 seconds ahead of a chasing group of 11. Unfortunately, Bob, you don't have any riders in that chasing group.
No, it would have been good if we did. That's what we were hoping for, but we haven't at the moment. So I think we've got two in the group just behind that. But there'll be obviously going to be a bit of a sort out now, and we'll see exactly where everyone is over the top of this one.
Well, Annemiek van Vleuten is on the front, driving pretty hard, and she hasn't really attacked. She's just challenging people to go with her here, and not many can. Yeah, I mean, there are five Bulls Dolmans riders in that group, but this isn't really tactics here, is it? This is just brute strength, isn't it?
She's one of the strongest, and this is the most difficult climb in the race, and it's where she wants to make a difference. And she's just going to see if she can split the group down to two or three of the strongest and isolate Bowles Dolmans. But I mean, we'll see.
Julian, the only British champion to ride the Giro, the only man to wear the British Champions jersey in the Giro, is this correct?
Well, according to Bob, I think, but I'm not too sure. It's quite possibly, but I don't know. Don't want you to quote me on it. But yeah.
Or put it on your Wikipedia. Yeah.
That's not what you said in the bar in Canberra 10 days ago.
Yeah. I think I might be, you know.
If any former British champions who rode the Giro are listening, do get in touch. put us right on that.
Yeah, that's my one claim to fame.
But Julian, are you I mean, you worked for British Cycling for many years, and you're kind of freelancing now. Are you coaching as well?
I do have a couple of people I coach.
Anyone we know?
Can't say.
Secret coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they know?
Yeah. Anyone who's in the front group, I probably coach. So I can't say any nationality.
Do you prefer working in women's cycling? Because you have worked a lot in women's cycling over the last few years.
Yes, 100%. Much prefer to work with the women.
Yeah. Why is that?
I just find it more exciting, and I also like, you know, trying to bring the British girls through as well. You know, I find it more motivating, to be quite honest. Men's racing has got more resources, and I'd like to be part of trying to bring women's racing more up to speed, I guess. I don't know, really. I'm not too sure how to answer that. I just prefer working at the women's, you know. Yeah. I don't think there's... And there's lots of prima donnas with the men's, you know. Mm. So, well, that's what I found anyway. Mm. Doesn't mean I don't like working with the men, but I would prefer to work with the women, for sure.
There's a good contract offer.
Is there sometimes more margin for improvement as well? Because, you know, we're watching this race. Lizzie Banks is in that chasing group. You know, she's come to cycling quite late, and is 29 now, I think, but you can see that she's still improving all the time.
Well, I think, like, historically, you know, the women do, yeah, I just think they have longer careers, you know, and, you know, there's very good, I mean, Harald van Vleuten, she's like, what, 37, is she?
Seven, I think.
Yeah, something like that, you know. I know she's quite unique, but I mean, you know.
Embarrassingly, in our predictions, none of us even mentioned Annemiek van Vleuten. I guess that would have been a real shot in the dark, wouldn't it? Suggesting Annemiek van Vleuten.
No, I think I said it'd be a lone winner on their own. I didn't want to play all my cards. You guys had three or four guesses each.
You
know?
Didn't give away the identity of said
lone
winner.
And it's boring saying van Vleuten, really, isn't it? Okay. You know, she rides one dimensionally. She just burns everybody off. you're just waiting for her to do it, you know.
Not waiting very long in Harrogate.
Exactly.
World Championships.
I mean,
she's phenomenal.
Yes,
it's not over, the race. I mean, quite a strong chasing group behind.
Yeah, yeah.
Last time we saw it on the screen, they were working quite well together, but the gap was staying at 15 seconds, so...
So guys, we're just driving out of Ghent here, and predictions please, guys.
I think Van Vleuten's going to be too strong for everybody. She'll probably flex her muscles on the most difficult climb, which is the Muir, over the Kapelmuir. She's going to probably have 10 or 15 seconds over the top, and then just time trial away. She is the former world champion time trialist, so, you know, why not?
Spot on, Bob. I think, yeah, he's spot on with that assessment, Bob, to be quite honest. I think he shows he knows his shit.
Well, yeah, great predictions, guys. Just as Van Vleuten comes into the finish here, she is unzipping her gilet finally, show her rainbow jersey. I think Marta Bastianelli, who really was a tip of ours at the start of the day, she looks like she's clipped off from that chasing group. So she is obviously starting the season well as well, but Van Vleuten, business as usual for her. Here she comes. Great win.
Who actually made the best prediction then?
I think we both said Bastianelli, didn't we?
Funny you should mention that.
Both said Bastianelli.
I said there'd be a lone leader, but refused to name her, which you'd all laugh.
Orlan Rose, I don't know about you, but I listened back to that with a certain sense of nostalgia already. Just, I think we talk in the car a lot about, you know, who's going to win. You know, just those sort of childish predictions about what might happen. And, you know, already it sort of highlighted for me how much I'm going to miss bike racing, and that excitement and that unpredictability and the unknown and the thrill that it gives us, I suppose, watching these races. And a race like Het Nieuwsblad, which is, although it's not a Women's World Tour race, amazingly, it's iconic, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's a great stage for the women. They ride just before the men, and there's a real sort of sense of equality, I feel, at that race in terms of how the teams are presented in the velodrome in Ghent. And you know, they're the same start, same finish, and so on, and live TV coverage as well this year, which was great, and fantastic crowds out too. So it felt like a big race and an important race. And you know, when it's won by Annemiek van Vleuten, that sort of elevates it as well, I think.
The crowds looked absolutely incredible. I saw pictures from the presentation and it looked immense. And it is such a shame. I mean, I'm missing the bike racing so much already. And I weirdly didn't expect to as much as this. I didn't realise how much that unpredictability and the excitement of racing really just filters through everything. But it is such a shame in the year that this is for women's cycling, the setup that we were looking forward to in terms of the new structure, but mainly the television coverage that we were going to get for some of these races for the first time was going to be so exciting. Even just watching Nieuwsblad, like I say, being able to watch it was just phenomenal. And like you say, Richard, the fact that it was Annemiek who won it as well just really made it feel like it was an important race that you were getting to watch. And it just wouldn't have had that feeling, I think, if you weren't able to watch it on television. And such a shame that this season of all seasons, with all the hard work that's gone into it and all the campaigning, that this is the season that's been interrupted so far. But, you know, it's whetted our appetites beautifully, and we'll be desperate for that racing when it comes back again, at least.
Also, like the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, it always has a sense of anticipation because it, you know, it's known as that opening weekend. So, you know, it is quite a big race, but it's meant to be kind of a marker for the rest of the season of seeing this rider's going well, that rider's going well, you know, who's going to be the young upstart, you know, who's going to be the champion who, you know, never loses her place on the throne. But so it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of strange to listen back. It seems so hopeful and and excited, and just to think about, you know, last time we all were together when I was saying about going to Strada Bianchi and how exciting that was going to be. And, you know, right up to that race, there was kind of this sense of, will it happen or will it not happen? It's kind of almost unthinkable now when we have this, you know, kind of drought in front of us. Like, I could have even considered going to see Strada Bianchi in the beginning of March. But yeah, but I mean, it's great to have that, you know, that slice of racing and to listen to all the, what it was like from the team car. It's always good to be in a race car with Bob Varney as well, wherever it is.
He's a great enthusiast, yeah.
I was going to say, Rose, it's funny when you say about the races and how we usually, the prism through which we usually look at them, and something like Newsblad, as you say, is usually seen not even so much as the result in itself, it's more a barometer for what's to come. And when I was doing my news roundup, I was looking back to make sure I hadn't missed any races. And there's so much coverage of the early season races saying what, you know, opening classics weekend tells us, for example. And everything is projected forward. We almost don't have time usually to sit and just digest a race as it was, because we're scrambling to understand what it can mean for the next race and the next race and the bigger races of the season. And it's quite sobering, really, to look back on the sparsity of the calendar as it is now, and to have that time to reflect on everything and to see the races as standalone results in their own right, if that makes sense. Because the early season races are now no longer a signifier of anything other than that rider won that race, and that in itself is quite wonderful. So I feel like there's a stillness to the calendar so far that's almost poetic, but maybe it's just too late at night and I'm getting all contemplative. You know what I mean?
That's always the case. I feel in the midst of the season, you're always... there's always a narrative that's unfolding over the course of the season, and you don't... Lionel made this very point, actually, in the regular podcast this week, that Paris-Nice was felt kind of special because everybody knew it was going to be the last race for a while, and so it kind of mattered in its own right in a way that it doesn't usually. You know, it's usually always regarded in the context of the season and also the bigger targets further down the road. I guess with this, you know, with those races, the riders didn't know that the season was about to, you know, come to a pause, shall we say. And, you know, to think also to listen back to that day in the car, it was a couple of weeks ago, but it feels like a more innocent time. There was a sense of crisis unfolding and happening in Italy at the time. And I think it was the same weekend as the World Track Championships in Berlin, actually. And we'll hear in a moment from Martina Alzini. She meant she was there, you know, and went back to this horror in Italy. And there was really no sense at all then that you know, coronavirus was going to have the impact that it is now having. It all happened very, very quickly since then. So, yeah, strange, sobering and almost nostalgic to listen back to these happy days. But they will return. They will return. But I did mention that I spoke to Martina Alzini, the Italian rider on Bigla Katusha. And she explained at some length what life has been like in lockdown in Italy, how she's been able to train and live. And, you know, for athletes and riders, the great difficulty is in not really knowing what the future holds, not knowing what you're training for, how you should be training. So it's a strange time for athletes as well. Here she is speaking from her apartment, Martina Alzini. Where are you, Martina?
The moment I'm living close to the Velodrome of Montichiari, because, you know, I'm based in Milan, but every time driving until Milan and here, it's more or less 2 hours by car. So because of the preparation for the Olympic Games, I need to stay close to track. So I decide to move here.
And are you still able to ride on the track just now?
No, at the moment the Montichiari Velodrome is closed, as every kind of public and sportive buildings. For example, all the swimming pool are closed, all the gym are closed, and also our Velodrome is closed now at the moment.
And I mean, since Italy went into lockdown, you've still been able to get out and train on the roads okay?
Yeah, I mean, Pro Cyclist, we received this email from our association of pro rider who has sent us this paper that we have to bring every time when we go outside for training. And this paper is something that allowed us to training outside, that shows that we are pro cyclists. So in the case of the police stop us, we have to show our license and this kind of paper.
And does that happen quite often? Do you get stopped and asked to show the certificate?
Well, to be honest, since the first day of the quarantine, I was never stopped by the police. But for example, I see lots of control from different kind of police. And well, lots of control, but luckily no one stopped me. And I tell you also, if they stop me, I'm pretty quiet, so mm-hmm. I'm not that scared, because I know some cyclists that were stopped, some pro cyclists, but when they explain the situation, they have never trouble with the police, so it's fine.
I mean, do you train on your own, or does it affect group rides? You know, can you train with other people?
No,
or do you train
never.
On your own?
Yeah. I especially now while training alone, what I see is that, okay, for sure the roads are without cars, so no busy, no traffic. But what I see is also that some people, like amateur, were outside for a, like, I can say...
A leisure ride, yeah.
Exactly. And this I don't like, because the laws speaks clear, and they can't go out. Is not allowed, is not permitted go outside if it's not for a work reason or a emergency reason. It's sad, because I know here with the sun, with the lake, you just want to enjoy your bike, but it's not possible, because first we have to think about our country and we have to think about healthy status.
You know, the rest of the time when you're not training, I guess you're just inside at home.
Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, because we have to think positive, we have to stay positive. So I say that fortunately now we are trying to prepare at the best the Olympic Games for the track. You know, it's also good preparing that at home. I mean, with rollers, with gym. And so we can do some home trainings. If I am not outside with my bike, I'm training at home, you know, with some core stabilities, some exercise, and some roller section that for us, for the track, is good and is part of you, of our daily routine, we can say this.
And I mean, is it difficult, though, to keep motivated, to keep that commitment when... There's obviously a lot to worry about, I guess. You know, you'll have friends, family affected as well.
Yeah.
And also the uncertainty of not knowing when you'll be able to return to racing. How difficult is it to keep the motivation high?
It's really difficult. And, you know, to be honest, I wake up some morning and I say, oh my God, today maybe I have a hard training. And you start to think, oh, why I have to do this? That after there is no races, that after maybe the Olympic Games will be postponed, so why? But, you know, in this really difficult moment, I think that the motivation and the concentration and the focus of your work is just what we need to carry on. So I try to wake up the morning and say, I have to do this, and this, because it's part of my work, because it's part of my daily routine, and I have to do this to be prepared in the case of, I don't know, in 1 month, in 2 months, we will start again to race. I have to be prepared. So as some of my teammates said on our WhatsApp group, they say, keep on going, girl, and try to think that, you know, it's just like winter season, that you have to prepare. You can train and you can push hard, because, you know, because you have no races, so in the future you have to be really prepared. So this is my motivation, and I really, really hope that Tokyo will be or postponed, or yes, we can do this together. And I think that is a problem of all the federation, not only cycling.
No.
But, you know, I say this, but I also want to say that healthy first, and for sure now the problem is concentrating just about our country and healthy of people and people who's involved and work for it.
And is training almost a distraction as well for you from, you know, more serious concerns, more serious things going on?
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I say, now I really feel this, especially because I'm not living with my parents, I'm not living with my grandparents anymore. I'm living alone here and I'm doing my quarantine here alone. So I wake up in the morning and I know that if I can't go out for with my bike, I completely can't go out. So I try to keep the concentration because of this, and I'm thankful that, you know, I can say I'm going out and I'm riding my bike because it's my job and I can do this. I can go out for working, and when I return I know that I have to stay home. And yeah, it's sad. I can go outside, I can meet my parents, my grandparents. And yeah, I want to also tell you that after the World Championships in Berlin, you know, we were there, and in Germany we never feel this sensation of emergency. We never feel that there is this really dramatic situation. And also we were in the velodrome doing the World Championship, and the velodrome was completely full of people, crowds, and this was just amazing, you know. And then when we were talking about our families in Italy, they say, oh my God, this is a really bad situation. You go in the supermarket, people is crazy everywhere. They are buying everything because, you know, it's really sad because, yeah, people is get infected. And we say, oh my God, it's unbelievable. We are here and we don't feel nothing. And, you know, when I return, I just want to make sure, for example, to don't stay so close to my grandparents, because, you know, maybe say, oh, I travel, I don't know, maybe I can be involved in this. So yeah, I really miss them, but I want to keep them safe. So I say hello, I say, yeah, I miss you, but not so close. Yeah, it's a bit sad, you know.
Yeah. And on a practical level, I mean, you mentioned food and supermarkets. Presumably you get out to do food shopping. Is that a problem, or is that been quite easy?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, as everything is a problem if you go in some specific hour. And it seems yesterday when I called my mom, she said this and I never forget. She said, it seems Christmas, you know, when every kind of food and people is like crazy to buy it. And yeah, the situation is dramatic. I mean, I live close to a supermarket where if you want to enter, you have to wait for the queue. And in this queue, you have to stay 1 meter, 1 meter and a half far from the other people. And you can't enter if you don't have like the mask, how to say, the mask for
the face mask. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And gloves and the sanitizer. I really hope that all the people are respecting that things, and because it's the only one thing that can save our country, you know.
And as are people observing that, you know, as far as you can see, people are obviously taking it very seriously, and they're observing all the new kind of laws that are in place.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what I can notice is that at the beginning the situation was so unbelievable that people doesn't trust. They say, oh yeah, we know there is some cases of coronavirus in our country, but I don't care. I know I'm used to go to the bar, I'm used to go at the restaurant, so I'm keep doing this. But now they understand that the situation is dramatic. The hospital are full of people, doctors and all the operators, all the people who is working in the hospital are completely full of work, and the system is just at the border, you know, at the borderline. Because, you know, in every hour, every minute on the TV and in every kind of broadcast, people are just saying, please keep safe, because otherwise sanitary system, it's full. And I think that now people understood this, and in the respect of the work and in the respect of the of the really hard work of the doctors. Now they are trying to avoid this. It's also a healthy question, but it's also respect for the doctor and for the people who is working for the cases.
Has there been anything positive about it? I don't mean to sort of put a positive spin on what's a terrible situation, but have you felt anything, you know, in terms of how you've been able to spend the time, maybe not traveling so much, maybe, you know, training on quieter roads, maybe a period of reflection and a period of having conversations with families with your family that you maybe don't have ordinarily? I mean, has there been anything positive at all in this period?
Yes, I think that in every kind of situation, also in the most dramatic situation, we have to think positive and try to take the positive side of the things, you know. And what I can say is that, for example, if I'm talking to my friends, normal friends, I'm not talking about cycling, I'm talking about, you know, people that is used to work or to study at the university that now is at home. Now they have a really good opportunity to spend some time with the family, to doing something that they have never done. I know lots of people who now they are trying to cook something specific, or I don't know, discover different hobby. This is fine. I think that this is the good side of stay at home, and there are lots of videos that you can find in Instagram or Facebook about people who from their balcony are singing, are playing music, because, you know, some days here we have in a specific hour, I don't know, like last week at Friday at 6, people was just out of the balcony for singing our national, we say inno.
Yeah, the national anthem. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, was a bit emotional, and you can't imagine. I was almost crying for this, because it's some situation that for us is just unbelievable, unreal, and it's something that make us more close, also if we are living far, if we are living isolate, it's something that unify us. Also, if I think about lots of people that are donate the money, and lots of sportive people that are together stronger for building something that can really help our society, this it make me not crying, but it's something that you never see every day, and when you see, you understand that humans sometimes can build something that it's really strong and helpful, and this is good. I just want to say the last thing that, yeah, for sure I'm thankful about all the people that are trying to help our country, but I also want that all the other countries like Italy take this kind of safety model, take really serious consideration about the coronavirus, because it's really dangerous. And they say, yeah, in Italy we have lots of cases of this, but Italy was one of the first country in Europe that take really serious and several healthy measurement, how to say, like, yeah, that all the other countries think about that.
Chute, chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
This month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina is supported by LACA. LACA is a community of cyclists all working together to insure their bikes and equipment in the event of damage or loss. Ensuring the premiums are lower and the payouts in the event of a claim are swifter, you'll be dealing with people who understand bikes, who will know their Shimano from their SRAM, and that racing bikes and equipment can be expensive. Your premium depends, of course, on the value of your bikes and equipment, and it goes up or down depending on how many other claims there are, though there is a ceiling. But don't take our word for it. Let's hear from a LACA customer.
My name is Luis. I'm a keen cyclist. I'm 46 years old. I ride around 300 kilometers a week. I became a LACA customer, I think, last year, a year and a half. I had actually two claims in 1 year. I crashed last year, broke my collarbone. The bike, some parts, they were damaged, which I claimed with the LACA, and they were excellent. I have no other word to describe their customer service and how they deal with the situation. I had everything fixed. I had a reply in 2 days. It was all sorted. So I just did a little video, which I uploaded to the website along with my claim describing what happened. And I had a reply, I believe, next morning. A very early morning, saying, yes, we're going to replace your helmet. If you can, the amount, how much will be for to fix the bike, which I had the shop to contact them. And they sorted out everything for me. I'm very, very satisfied customer. And I advise anyone who can hear this, Laka, it's amazing.
If that sounds like the sort of insurance you'd like for your bikes and equipment, go to laka.co.uk. That's laka, LAKA.co.uk.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for their continued support of the cycling podcast Femina. You can get 25% off your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. I can see you both smiling there, but I'm not going to permit any singing this month because the delays on our respective connections are just going to make that even more of a horror show than it usually is.
There's no winners, is there? There's no winners. Yeah.
Nah, definitely not. Well, we heard before the break there from Martina Alzini, the Italian rider. We wish her and every other rider and everybody else affected by coronavirus and the lockdown the best of luck, and hope that, you know, some certainty appears soon. And I think we're all looking to Italy, aren't we, for cause that's the country in Europe that was affected first and most seriously at the moment, and you look for some signs that it's going to end there, and that will give us all a sense of how
long. Canary in the coal mine there, isn't it?
Yeah, give us all a sense of how long this may last. So strange. And you know, Martina there talked about some of the positive things that have come out of it in the situation that she and others are in. So, you know, that was nice to hear as well. But obviously, it's a dreadful situation. Just a couple of odds and sods. I hope they don't mind me describing them as that from Het News.
Which one's odd and which one's sod?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I spoke to, we didn't mention Lizzie Banks, our, well, part of the cycling podcast family, isn't she, Lizzie? Because she,
our sister, our, yeah, cycling podcast sister,
she presents Service Course, our equipment and tech podcast with Tom Wally. That's a monthly podcast as well. Does a great job on that. But she's also quite a handy bike rider, and she rode really well at Het Nieuwsblad. She was in that chasing group, which was, you know, a very strong chasing group, and finished sixth in the race. And for her, that was she won a stage the Giro last year. She rode very well at the women's tour, but I felt that was a bit of a breakthrough performance from her, not just the result, but the performance. She was very aggressive and really not afraid at all to stick her nose in the wind and have a real go and take it to these riders. So I spoke to her at the finish, and I was quite impressed by just how sort of gung-ho she was and not daunted at all by some of the company she was keeping. That was quite a day you had out there. Sixth, happy with that?
Yeah, it was a war from start to finish. On the start line, there were so many people dressed in like short shorts and short arms, and I just thought, you're bloody stupid, because we knew that the rain was going to come. We knew it was going to get cold. It was about energy as possible, staying as warm as possible. I was missing a tiny bit today. I had a crash in Valencia on the first day, and I smashed up my knee. So I was like, I spent 3 days this week resting. So I think I was just lacking a little bit of sharpness, but I killed myself to make that group. Over the Kapelmoor and just over the top of the Bosberg, I just couldn't quite react. So yeah, I was killing myself to try and stay ahead, and when I thought it was 3k to go, it was actually 6k to go, because they told us the wrong distance. But no, all in it all, I'm pretty happy. We have a really strong team here today. Some of the girls had some misfortune, but it's a really good showing of what's to come over the next few months and over the spring. And I think that our team, Biglia Katusha, I think we have so many strong riders who really care about each other and really care about working together, that we can get some really good results and results that speak volumes for the size of the team that we are.
You said you were quite nervous at the start. I think that was probably about clothing choices as much as anything, because it did look a bit uncertain then. But when you know, at the sharp end of the race, when you find yourself in that group, in that company that you were in, you must have looked around and been pretty happy to find yourself there.
Yeah, but it's about believing that you're just as good as those people. You can't look around and think they're world class and I'm not. You have to think, I can do this just as much as they can. Okay, yeah, I did get gapped over the Bosberg, so I need to be smarter. Maybe that's something I need to work on. But if you let it get inside your head and you let them think that they're bigger than you, then you're not going to have a chance.
So clearly you're not intimidated at all.
No, I don't think we have any reason to be. Like, we showed in Valencia that we've got a really strong team, and we're here, we mean business, like, we're just as good as them. Yeah, maybe we don't have a big bus, maybe we don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on loads of shit, but, like, we're strong, we work hard, we deserve to be here too.
So that was Lizzie Banks of Bigla Katusha. And I also spoke to Rolf Aldag, who is making his debut in women's cycling with Canyon SRAM, a sports director for many years, of course, with HTC High Road, Quick Step, and Dimension Data. And he's switched over to the women's sport and is really learning in the seat at the Canyon SRAM team. So I spoke to him at the finish of Het Nieuwsblad. How are you finding your new role? How was it today? A familiar race for you, but I guess a different type of race.
Well, the biggest problem actually was being car 23. So we really had bad luck in picking the cars, and you really have no sense and rhythm for what goes on in the race. So it's really, you can just give technical advice, but tactically wise, it's super difficult. I think the girls did do really well, being with two in the 21st, and then was epic, was cold, was windy. And then it just didn't last to the finish line, but that was quite all right. But it's super active, the race, if you see it. You know, it's always on. It keeps on going. It's shorter. So you have to be awake from kilometer zero as well. And it was definitely interesting. Looking forward to do some more.
Yeah, are you enjoying the role? I know you were in the training camp and riding a bit with the girls as well, but are you enjoying getting under the skin of what's, I think you said it was like a new sport almost.
Yeah, it's a complete different thing. You know, it is complicated. I'm really thankful for also, like, you know, for getting this opportunity to learn this new you know, side of cycling. Of course, it's still cycling, it's still professional road cycling, but the strategies are different, the strengths of teams are different, so it's a learning process. And I try to bring up some new things, like presentations to them, giving them a lot of tactical information so they know what they can expect. But then I really, really need their help on how the race unfolds and everything. It's the riders, it's Ronnie himself, so it's definitely super interesting. It's, you know, like a little child, like, you know, discovering new things.
So that was Rolf Aldag. Baptism of fire for him. They were unlucky. It's a completely random draw at that race for the order of the team cars. I think they were just about last team car, so didn't really see an awful lot of action that day. Another thing that caught my eye there was Service Canavan's new women's team was riding. They had a big old bus and everything, quite an impressive setup. NXTG Racing, and his daughter Britt Canavan is one of their riders. She's 19. He's got four daughters, hasn't he? And I think at least a few of them are racing cyclists. Anything more from this month, ladies?
Well, I was actually going to just say about Savas's team. He's had a team for a few years now, and he's kind of just followed up the ranks with his daughter Britt. So while she was a junior, it was a junior team. And it will be quite a baptism of fire, because when they're at these junior races, I went in the race car for their team at Gent Fevelhem Juniors, and they would rock up. Everyone else would just, you know, not even have practically enough fold-up chairs that they could sit on, and they would rock up and they would have a big van. They'd get all the Pinarello Dogmas off the roof rack. And so I think it would be quite a surprise for them, going from dictating the racing to coming in and being against the big guns.
Yeah, they've certainly get a bit of help from the Team Sky and now Team Ineos sponsors as well. Well, listen, we should wrap things up for this month. We'll be back for the April episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. I know, Orla, you've got a really fascinating interview set up for that. We'll have lots more as well. Lots will be going on. We'll hope, maybe we'll have an idea of when or a vague idea of when racing might return as well. Who knows?
Who knows? But we'll have plenty of stories.
You're asking too much of us now, Richard.
We'll have plenty of stories to get your listening chops around, though. That's for sure. It's going to be a meaty old episode.
I don't expect you to know. Anyway, that's all for this month. Thanks, Rose.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, all.
Thanks,
thank you both. Good luck. Stay safe. Wash your hands.